From NPR News, I'm Tony Cox. On today's show, we'll continue our look at the new crop of African-American congressmen and women. Today, Representative and Reverend Emmanuel Cleaver of Missouri. Also, with President Bush maintaining the drive for January 30th elections in Iraq, we'll hear from Baghdad reporter Hannah Alam on what the campaign season looks like. And finally, we'll revisit Chicago jazz man Von Freeman, bringing hip new fans on board, even as an octogenarian. But first, what a week. Thousands have died in one of the worst natural disasters of this century. How are Americans responding to the devastation? President Bush has renominated 20 of his most contentious judicial appointments. Will they find their way into the courts thanks to a hefty new Republican majority in the Senate? And if Republicans follow through on their threats to give the filibuster a facelift, what will the political implications be for Democrats and for a president eager to leave a legacy of reform? Here to help us sort through the headlines are two of our frequent contributors. Sam Fulwood III, a columnist with The Plain Dealer in Cleveland, Ohio, and author of the book Full of It, Strong Words and Fresh Thinking for Cleveland. Sam, how are you?
Hey, Tony, I'm great.
Callie Crossley, a Boston-based sociocultural commentator who appears weekly on the media criticism show Beat the Press. Callie, nice to have you on as well.
Hi, Tony.
Well, Sam, Callie, the weather outside has definitely been frightening lately. Let's talk about the devastation in South Asia. I'm interested in pursuing this point. The pictures that we are seeing in the press are hard to look at, I think. But more and more, American media print and broadcast seem to be showing us these grisly scenes. Is something changing? What's going on with that, Callie?
I don't think anything is changing. It's always been a question of taste and a little bit of timing. There's newspapers particularly just go back and forth about whether they should show some of the pictures. And quite frankly, most newsrooms would like to show the pictures and feel a little bit hampered by public reaction. I personally think that the pictures ought to be shown. That's reality. People ought to know what's going on. And one of the reasons I think that for some, the Iraq war is in the recesses of their mind is that we don't see enough of the gruesome pictures. Now, make no mistake, I don't want to see them, but I think that that's what we should do in the news is to show you what's actually happening. So I think that the pictures of the horrible tragedy and the numbers, which are hard to really put in your mind to make sense of. Somebody said it's 10 times the number of people who died in 9/11 in America, that we have to think about and understand what that means. And I think one of the ways to do that is to really show those pictures.
Well, you know, as a reporter, we have all seen death, unfortunately, some of us very close and personally. And yet, even I'm an old hardened guy, Sam, and it was hard to look at those pictures of those babies on the front page. What are your readers? What are they responding? How are they responding?
I think Callie's absolutely right. It's curious. You know, we can't show flag-draped coffins in this country without creating a political uproar if those flags have Old Glory on it. And I think that there is this sort of exposes the subjective nature and the market value or market appetite for news and information. It's always been easy to write about and to depict tragedies when they are far away from home. I'm reminded of the famine in Somalia a generation ago,
mm-hmm.
and we saw pictures, you know, the stick figures. We've seen pictures of Holocaust victims and in history books and the like, and in the newspapers. But it's something about showing American suffering, particularly if it has any kind of a political tinge to it, that we draw the line because we don't want the news, the information, the raw stuff of what's really going on to affect us in such a way that it changes our politics.
That's an interesting take. Let's talk politics. There was a lot of that this week as well. I'm curious to hear your take, Callie, on Bush's renominations. The fact that he's revisiting so many candidates seems to be a direct challenge to the Democrats who accepted more than 200 nominees during his first term. Is the president grandstanding here, or is he using that political capital that he gained with his election? What's up?
Well, I think he's throwing down the gauntlet, absolutely. I think he's decided, you know what, these are the 20 I wanted, and I'm going back, and I'm just going to fight and see if I can get them. And, of course, he knows that the landscape has changed in the Senate, and so there's a very, very tiny, tiny, narrow line there that can make a difference between getting his nominees pushed through or not. And so he's just decided, you know what, you know, I'm going to do this, and I think I got the political goodwill with me. And so what if people say that it's not operating in a bipartisan way?
Well, he certainly...
The fact of the matter is, Bush has a very short window to solidify his legacy. He has on the order of about 18 months. After he gets close to the midterm elections, and it's generally acknowledged that presidents in the second term, midterm elections, almost always lose political support in Congress. So if he wants to do some of the things that he really, really wants to do, he has to do it now. So it shouldn't come as a surprise that he's going to push for some of the programs, tax cuts and changing the way that the Social Security is done, and pushing for some of these judicial nominees who will be his legacy long, long after he's out of office.
Well, Sammy,
I think what people were hoping for, though, even Arlen Specter, the Republican who's head of the committee that'll be examining or deciding whether up and down on these nominees, were looking toward some sign that says, okay, maybe 18 of these people, maybe 15, but let's begin in a fresh and a new way, in the words of Arlen Specter, to see if we can reach some bipartisan support and maybe give him his legacy. In this way, he seems to say, my legacy, my way or the highway, and right now, and all of that, and no room for people to sort of work with him.
Now, I'm going to have to remind you and Sam, I'm the host of this show, so you got to let me get a word in here every once in a while. Senate Republicans seem to be lined up on his side, Callie, with regard to these nominations, particularly as it relates to trying to change the rules of filibuster. Will they be successful with that?
I think that they might have a shot at it. I've seen a couple of things happening recently that have been going against tradition, as it were. So this is a big traditional manner and way that people have operated in the Senate. And so if they wanted to do this, I suppose, in the same way that this is the time for the president to do what he needs to do, this is the time for folks who believe they've gotten a mandate from the public to come back and say, we're going to change the rules.
Let me step out on a limb, but it
could happen.
All right, Sam.
But I don't think that's going to happen.
Really, why?
And here's why. The filibuster rule is crucial to preserving the power of the minority in the Senate. This administration is not going to be in power forever. And I think that there are a lot of Republicans who seem to, those who are pushing for this change, seem to forget how hard the Democrats controlled Congress when they were in a total power. If this happens and when it turns around, all that they want to do can be undone, because then the Democrats will use this anti-filibuster. And I think that at the end of the day, the congressional leaders will say, this is an abuse that we cannot stomach. Even if we can use it to our advantage, when we're not in power anymore, this is not something that we want to be beholden to.
That's an interesting take. We'll have to wait to find out about it. I want to move on to one other thing, Sam, with you that I know you don't want to talk about, but we need to, just because it just keeps popping up over and over and over again, the Ohio recount. Now it's in the courts. The Secretary of State in Ohio doing some of the kinds of things that the Secretary of State back in 2000 did in Florida, it seems. So is this over? What's the latest?
You know, I'm uncomfortable with this whole recount situation, largely because, one, the election is over, and we're not going to reverse that. For as long as people are keeping this story alive, and I do understand, let me be very clear, I do understand that we want to make sure everybody's votes count and that it was done as fairly as possible. But as long as people keep driving and looking for excuses to invalidate, they're not going to change the outcome. And what they do is they undermine the authority of our political system. And that's a very, very dangerous thing. What's happened lately is that there have been subpoenas or depositions for the Secretary of State. I think really what the in Ohio, Ken Blackwell, who is an announced candidate to be the governor of Ohio, and I think that there's a lot of political chicanery that's going on to bloody him in such a way that to curtail his political ambitions. And I think that's problematic, because it really does make people doubt that politicians can do anything right.
All right. We're going to bring 2004 to a close with Reporters Roundtable. You are our last two for the year. And I want to ask you, because, you know, I've been busy like crazy with the stories this year, and I can't think of a year that I have had in recent years that has been as busy as this. Either of you, have you felt that there's been more news that keep you busy all year this year?
I think so. It feels like more earth-shattering news, if you will. I'm looking at those pictures of the tsunami and just looking at worldwide the weather changes. It just feels like there is nothing that happens small or that has happened small in this year, that everything has been larger than life, if you will.
You know, that's true, Sam. I would imagine, even especially for you in Ohio, I mean, politics, even the Cleveland Browns have been making news this year.
Yeah, I think you're right. But I think that that's a function of us getting older. The world.
You speak for yourself.
I think the world seems to be changing faster. As we get older, it's harder to absorb all the changes. I tell you, the story that I'm still reeling from.
You got to make it short, though.
Ray Charles is gone.
No,
how I can live without Ray Charles.
Ray Charles.
I'm with you on that.
I like that, too. That's a good place for us to stop. Sam Fullwood III is a columnist with The Plain Dealer in Cleveland, Ohio, and author of the book Full of It, Strong Words and Fresh Thinking for Cleveland. Callie Crossley is a Boston-based sociocultural commentator who appears weekly on the media criticism show Beat the Press. We've been thankful to have both of you on Reporters Roundtable this year. We hope to have both of you back again next year. Sam, Callie, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year,
Tony.